Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Beers with Chad, or today it's going to be Wine with Chad. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, your host, powerlifter, entrepreneur, real estate investor, jiu-jitsu purple belt, former professional strongman, strength and conditioning coach to athletes of all varieties, former national champion shot putter, all kind of stuff. So this weekend, ton of fun. We had Jake Knapp at the Mexico Open, setting first the 54-hole record and then Sunday finishing it off for his first PGA Tour victory. Jake's a rookie on the PGA Tour, and he is from Mesa Verde Country Club, my home club, his home club, and I've known him since he was in high school, which is about 11 or 12 years now. So it was a ton of fun to watch Jake when we had like 50, 60 guys there in the members grill cheering him on. A lot of whom have known Jake since he was, in elementary school, coming to play at the club with his dad and then working in the kart barn and, always being around playing that as his home course for his high school team, Estancia High School here in Costa Mesa, California. I first got to know Jake through his older brother, Ryan, who's also an incredible golfer, and one of the first clients for Juggernaut Training Systems, the original Juggernaut Training Systems gym, opened in 2009 in Laguna Hills, California. And an early client came about as the OCC Orange Coast College men's golf team. And on that team was a spindly, gangly golfer by the name of Ryan Knapp. Ryan did really well at OCC, went and played for UCI, and as he was getting ready to go play at UCI, came back in for more strength and conditioning, bringing his younger brother, Jake, who was graduating from Estancia High School and getting ready to go play at UCLA. And, back in 2009 or 2010, it's kind of funny that I even, got contacted to do golf strength and conditioning because, at that time I was a shot putter transitioning into becoming a powerlifter. And though I'd been around golf a little bit my whole life, playing with my dad some when I was a kid, my grandparents were like super into golf. I had no experience doing strength and conditioning for golfers. Fortunately, the golfers were so weak and untrained in that regard that we really could have done anything and it worked out. But I based a lot of my training around the idea, a great friend of mine, Nate Rolfe, my freshman and sophomore college roommate. So we're on the track team together at the University of California, Berkeley, Go Bears. And Nate was primarily a hammer thrower as well as a discus thrower. I was a shot putter with a little bit of hammer throwing. And we'd go to the driving range from time to time, and I had never seen anyone in my life swing a golf club as hard as Nate could, and just absolutely blistering swing. Where it went is another story, but the club head speed, phenomenal. So as I got ready to train these golfers, I thought back to, what would be effective training, and Nate's golf swing stood out in my mind. And as I thought about, the concept of special strength and all that sort of stuff, I was like, of course this guy could swing a golf club super hard. He was taking this 16-pound ball and winding it around his head, hundreds and hundreds of times per week, and doing, a lot of rotational training. So I got it. Okay, all right, I'm going to train these guys like really weak hammer throwers. And that was sort of the basis of our training with the OCC golf guys. We had a lot of fun with that. So Jake goes off to UCLA. Then he's playing on the Canadian Tour, or the Corn Ferry, then Canada, then, if you watch the tournament this weekend, you heard a lot of talk about him being off the mini tours and working as a bouncer, which pretty rare for a professional golfer to have that on his resume. I'm never really sure what's ironic or not, at a bar called the Country Club here in Costa Mesa. I may have seen him there from time to time, but I don't actually remember. So he worked as a bouncer there for a couple of years while he sort of got his golf game back in order to get back on the Korn Ferry Tour, where he finished, I think, 13th on their points list last season, earning his way onto the PGA Tour. And you've already heard, you know, if you've been listening these last couple of weeks, you've heard me talk about Jake and hear me talk about, you know, his T3 finish at Torrey Pines for the Farmers Insurance Open. And then to go out there in Mexico and, you know, be finishing the second round, tied for the lead, and then the third round, go out, shoot 7 under on the front nine. So a 50 or a 28 on the front nine. So on pace for 56, which is just, you know, that would have been so incredible and mind blowing. But, you know, finishes the day with a 63 and sets their 54 hole scoring record. So the best score through three rounds. And I can't even imagine that feeling going to sleep that night. And I'm excited that, you know, hopefully when he has time, as you're about to find out, he's about to be extra busy coming out. But when he has time, that we're going to get to talk to Jake on here. But that feeling of going to sleep that night, knowing what's at stake the next day. And I think that's one of the things that's so remarkable about golf is, you know, and remarkably challenging about golf, is it gives you so much time to think about what you're doing. And that time and thinking can become a lot of people's enemies. You know, they overthink, they get tight, whatever it is. And on the line for Jake with a possible victory, besides, I think, $1.5 million in winning that, was also going to be a 2-year tour exemption, meaning he's, you know, on the PGA Tour for at least 2 more years after this. It was also entrance into the rest of the season's elevated events, you know, which, like this Mexico Open, had a purse around $8 or $9 million of total prize money. Those elevated events are $20 to $25 million and no cut, so he knows he's getting paid. And finally, it meant a spot at the Masters. And anyone, whether you follow golf or you don't follow golf, you know what a big deal the Masters tournament is each April in 2020 and November. But each April in Augusta, Georgia, a tradition unlike any other. And now Jake's going to be a part of that in a couple weeks. And I know a lot of guys from the club are pumped to go out and watch him. And it was such a special, fun time watching everyone support him and just get so fired up to see his success. And if you haven't watched him play, he's a lot of fun to watch, because he has the smoothest, butteriest, tempoed swing that you're ever going to see. But then he is absolutely hitting nukes, like cruising 190 plus mile an hour ball speed on a swing that looks like he's given maybe 20% effort. And it's so incredible to see. So go check him out, Jake Knapp. And we're very excited for him to go to the Masters, all these big tournaments, you know, the Players Championship, TPC Sawgrass, you know, the Memorial, all this great stuff. So Jake, this afternoon, I'm drinking Belgolo Dairyman Pinot Noir, which I don't really know much about wine. My buddy Colby picked this out for me at the club, and Colby worked in restaurants for a long time, so you know it's good. And then I looked on some wine website, and it was like a 94 as the score. Cheers. Oh yes, a luxurious mouthfeel, hints, notes of terra firma. I don't know about wine, but that tastes good, so I know enough about that. So cheers to you, Jake. The rest of this episode, I'm gonna be talking about the NFL Combine, which kicks off this week, about the top 10 Combine performances of all time, as well as ways that I would revamp the Combine if they put me in charge. So here we go. Beers with Chad. Cheers.
Welcome to Beers with Chad.
right, this week the NFL Combine is upon us. One of my favorite times of year. I've just always been obsessed, really, with strength and conditioning since I was, 14 years old, a freshman in high school, writing my own strength training programs. I'd say that's when I got the most into it. But even as a little kid, whether it's I watched the Rocky montages, I would say too many times, but I think the answer is just enough times. My brothers are showing me Terminator 2, Commando, all this kind of stuff when I'm, 6, 7 years old. Probably may have been inappropriate films for me at that point. But I loved them. I loved how jacked the guys, the actors were. I just love the idea of training and training hard. So as I got into high school and was training for football and for track, for shot put and discus, the NFL Combine became this landmark event each year. And we didn't have NFL Network, but I would watch the highlights on ESPN. I was going, trying to find all the results. And I just had these, anyone who knows me knows I have a ton of what some might call useless, but comes in handy for occasions like this, information in my head, particularly around numbers, around times and weights and distances and all that kind of stuff. And I was just obsessed with these. So I'd, become, oh, did you guys see that, so-and-so ran this 40, or he did this many reps, and just always really into it. So the Combine's something I've followed pretty closely for the last 20, 25 years. And I've also done Combine prep coaching, for free agent combines, for the NFL Combine, all kind of stuff, and been to the NFL Combine, and it's a ton of fun. I had the NFL Combine described to me as NFL coach spring break, because as much as it is about evaluating the players, it's also about networking for the coaches. So I got to spend a ton of time with my good friends from the San Francisco 49ers, one of my best friends, Dustin Perry, their head strength coach, out there a couple years ago. And, that led to drinking beers with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, and then, oh, there's Sean McVay over there. Let's have a beer with Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and all these guys. And it's crazy at the Combine because it's kind of all built around these two hotels. I know we were staying at the W, and maybe it was Hyatt Regency or something was the other. And they're all interconnected to the Indianapolis Convention Center and Lucas Oil Stadium, where they have the Combine and all the different events, media and medical and everything else, and all the meetings around that. And you can kind of just go through these tunnels and stuff, because it is the winter there in Indianapolis, and it can be kind of cold. And you end up, 8:30 or so at either the W Bar or the Hyatt Bar, and everyone you see is an NFL coach, or a media person, or private strength and conditioning coach, like I was there as. And it was kind of crazy because there'd be so many people that, from ESPN or whatever, that you would recognize, but seeing them like out of context, kind of like I'd see them, is that one of my dad's friends from church? Oh no, that's Norv Turner, And so it was crazy like that, but you got to talk to, these guys. I talked to Field Yates a bunch out there, and then all these football coaches too. So a really fun experience in that way. The Combine the last couple of years has been, let's say, diminished in importance, as teams see, maybe some faults in the process. And I'm going to talk about those later. But first, I want to talk about the most impressive, my favorite Combine performances of all time, and the numbers that I love so much about this. So I'm gonna lead off with number 10, and these are gonna run, pretty full for the last 20 or so years. I'm not gonna go too far back to some things that are regarded as really all-time performances, like Deion Sanders or Bo Jackson, even maybe Mike Mamula, or Tony Mandarich type of guys, just because the timing and evaluation, I think, is a little bit less reliable then. And while, a Bo Jackson 4.1340 is a great story. It might just be a story. I don't know that he's running that much faster than a lot of these other guys who, you know, had run faster like track times than him or 60 meter times for indoor track. So I'm keeping these like 2000 and after. So leading off, Christian Gonzalez from Oregon, corner, rookie this past year for the New England Patriots. 6'1", 197, 4'3", 40, 14 reps of 225, which for a corner, really good. 41.5-inch vertical and 11.1 broad jump. So great 40, solid bench press for a corner, and then those huge jumps to go along with it for Christian Gonzalez. Next up, number 9, Jordan Davis. Jordan Davis at the University of Georgia plays D tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles. When I saw some of these numbers pop up for Jordan Davis, they were real like, what the fuck just happened? Jordan Davis, 6'6", 341 pounds, 4.78, 40, 32-inch vertical, 10.3 broad jump. Another one in the similar kind of vein that I considered here was Dontari Poe. I did like that Dontari Poe also had 44 reps of 225, while Jordan Davis didn't bench there. And Dontari Poe was like 346 and ran, I believe, 498. And at the time when he did that, you know, someone could say that Dontari Poe walked so Jordan Davis could run. But I mean, you know, Dontari Poe ran fast so Jordan Davis could run even faster as a freakishly large man. And then those jumps, over 10-foot broad jump at 341 pounds is pretty unprecedented. Your boy here in his prime shot-putting days, I broad jumped over 10 feet, but at about 285 pounds, 290 pounds, sticking an extra 50 pounds on there and doing that same distance is pretty amazing. Next up, another big man, Teron Armstead at a little Arkansas Pine Bluff, 6'5", 306, offensive tackle, 4.7140, 31 reps, 34.5-inch vertical, 9.4 broad jump, decent change of direction times as well, 4.72 20-yard shuttle, 7.62 three-cone drill. And Teron Armstead is a guy coming from a small school who really made himself a lot of money at the combine. And that's a big man, moving, explosive, doing all the drills, which I appreciate for this exercise as well. Tristan Wirfs was another O-lineman that I heavily considered. He's bigger, 320 pounds, ran a 4.85, huge jumps, jumping numbers as well. Trent Williams, the Silverback, big combine performances, guys like Bruce Campbell out of Maryland. He ended up being a huge bust, but a lot of great O-line performances out there too. Next up, Mario Williams, number 1 overall pick, ahead of Reggie Bush from NC State, and a lot of that probably happened because of this combine performance. 6'7", 295 pounds, 4.7140, 35 reps, 40.5-inch vertical, 10-foot broad jump. So this was back in 2005, I believe, that Mario Williams did this. You know, people, they keep getting bigger, stronger, faster, better at the combine tests, more well-prepared for it as coaches have more experience and it all becomes a more refined process. So in context, when Mario Williams did this back in 2005, it was that much more remarkable. As that is a huge, huge person. 6'7", 295, moving incredibly well. Also, don't want to forget about Mario Williams' teammate that year, Manny Lawson, who was a D-end outside linebacker as well, who got drafted by the 49ers. He was like 6'5", 250. I know that he had a 42-inch vertical. And crazy thing about Manny Lawson, a college football defensive end, is while at NC State, he was ACC indoor triple jump champion. You know, he probably didn't weigh 250 when he did that, but let's say he was 6'5", 230 and triple jumping like 50 feet. the amount of force coming down in the hop, skip, and jump portions of the triple jump is remarkable. And that's why those guys, great triple jumpers, they're on the taller side, typically, maybe, you know, 6'1", 6'2", but lanky, extremely lanky, rubbery, elastic athletes. So I did consider Manny Lawson in this spot, but went with Mario Williams. A ton of, you know, 35 reps on the bench. Incredible, too, for a 6'7 guy. Next up, and please forgive me on the name, but Adentiowa Adebowore. Adebowore from Northwestern last year. D-tackle, D-end. This guy was another... What the fuck does that number say? 6'2", 282, 4.49 40-yard dash. 4.49 40-yard dash at 282 pounds. Heaviest guy to ever break 4.5. 27 reps to go with that. 37.5-inch vertical, 10.5 broad jump. That is just a incredibly explosive, powerful man. Like, there are wide receivers and running backs who don't run 4.49. Plenty of them. Like, if he had those exact same numbers as a corner, you know, teams would have been pumped about it. He's doing that as a 282-pound DN with the potential to play inside as well. Next up, number 5 out of Penn State, Saquon Barkley. 6 foot, 233, 4.4 40-yard dash, 29 reps, 41-inch vertical, 4.24 20-yard shuttle. Remember when Saquon came out, they were talking, you know, putting his numbers up against, and it's like this notable corner prospect, and Saquon ran a faster 40. And then a notable like D-line prospect, and Saquon did more reps. And then a notable wide receiver prospect, and Saquon had a higher vertical at 6 foot, 233. And if you know about Saquon Barkley, you know he's a legend in the Penn State weight room, over 400-pound clean while he was in college with, you know, less than ideal weightlifter technique. Leg, fucking massive legs. He's just a beast all around. I'm interested to see what happens with him in this upcoming NFL offseason. But he comes in as my number 5 all-time combine performance. And number 4, Vic Beasley, DN, linebacker from Clemson. He's had a solid career with the Falcons. Freakish athlete all around, killed the combine. 6'3", 246, 4.53 40-yard dash, 35 reps of 225, 41-inch vertical, 10.10 broad jump, 4.15 shuttle, 6.91 three-cone drill. Big, fast, powerful, agile. Congratulations, Vic Beasley. What a stud. Now this next one, Byron Jones from UConn. Cornerback, safety, had some time with the Cowboys and the Dolphins. Byron Jones, well-rounded, but for a cornerback safety, the first numbers don't really jump off the page at you. 6 foot, 199 pounds, 4.49 40. Like, how are you putting this guy at number 3, running a 4.49, the same time as a D-end, a 282-pound guy from a couple spots ago? Well, here's why. 44.5-inch vertical, 12 feet, 3-inch broad jump. That's the highest of levels. 3.94-second 20-yard shuttle, 6.78 three-cone drill. When Byron Jones did a 12.3 broad jump, you can like see in the video of it, the rest of the defensive backs, the measurement people like looking at each other like, what? Did he start past the line? Like what was going on? Because it was just so much farther than anyone had ever done. I think the record up to that point at the NFL Combine was 11.7 and he went 12.3. There are a few legends of the broad jump that I know of from track and field and weightlifting. Yeah, that's a pretty universal test through speed power sports. And Al Feuerbach shot putter and weightlifter, American guy in the 70s. He did over 12 feet as like 6 foot, 240 pounds. And then Yurik Vardanian, an incredible weightlifter from Russia, his son Norik was a really good lifter for the US. I've heard numbers for Yurik Vardanian in the broad jump of like 13.5, I think is the number that stands out to me. Anecdotal, a lot of times track guys and weightlifters probably similarly, if they're doing that test, they're doing it with their toes over the edge of a long jump sand pit and into the sand, able to sell out a bit more. Byron Jones is doing this in a very official capacity. And the thing about the combine too is it's not set up for these guys to be as successful as possible in a lot of ways, because the day or days going into it, they're doing all these medical exams, they're doing meetings, it's stressful, they're getting to sleep late. And he went out and put some elite 0.1 of 0.1% of the Earth's population kind of numbers out there with those jumps, and great quickness, change of direction numbers as well. Finally, number two, I have two just absolute freaks coming out. Number two, Myles Garrett, your 2023 NFL Defensive Player of the Year. 6'4", 272 pounds, 4'6", 4'40", 33 reps, 41-inch vertical, 10'8 broad, 4'2", 20-yard shuttle. Looking like an absolute Adonis. Every test there, killed it. Myles Garrett, he's just a freak. And then this happened when I was in high school and was definitely a moment of like, yes, this guy is the next level. I've never heard of any numbers like this, especially from a guy this size. And the number one all-time combine performance, Vernon Davis, tight end out of Maryland, great NFL career, 49ers primarily. 6'3", 254 pounds, 4.39 40. When that happened, a guy 250 plus breaking 4.4, you run a 4.4 point something, like, yes, incredibly elite speed. But, and now more guys are getting into those high 4.2s, but really breaking the 4.4 number, that's when you're like going from elite football speed to, oh my God, this is some next level mutant, usually reserved for corners and wide receivers, not tight ends, not guys who weigh 250, not guys who are doing 30 plus reps. Like, even if you were to look at a club as like a 30-30 club of 30 reps, 30 plus inch vertical would be pretty rare. To go 33 reps and a 42 inch vertical, and to a broken 4.4, huge broad jump, great change of direction times two, 4.17, 20-yard shuttle, 7 seconds flat in the three-cone drill. Vernon Davis, to me, is like the icon of NFL combine performances, and that's why he gets my number one. So go in the comments, tell me your favorite combine performance, who I messed up. People love arguing about these things. I've noticed in the last 500 comments on the Toughest Sports Instagram post. So I'm going to take a quick break and be back and talk about some ways to revamp the NFL Combine. Cheers. Today's episode of Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. If you are looking to get totally customized, individualized, adaptive powerlifting and strength training for you, the smartest program for you, today's episode of Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. If you want the smartest program for you, fully customized, adapts to your feedback, grows as you grow as a lifter, visit juggernautai.app and use code BEERS to save on your monthly subscription. All right, so now that we've looked at the all-time greatest combine performances, I want to talk about what is the NFL Combine, what should the NFL Combine be? And the first kind of question to answer or ask with that, is the NFL Combine about evaluating potential NFL players or is it a TV product for the NFL? In my opinion, it's more of a TV product, and that's why the things I'm talking about are very unlikely to happen, because the longer they keep the same events, they can have records in those events. People, fans can have more context in comparing the numbers, even though it's maybe not as effective as an evaluation tool for the teams, the general managers, the coaches, and all that. So the first thing is the most iconic part of the NFL Combine. It's the 40-yard dash. First thing you need to understand about the 40-yard dash is that when you see a number on the TV that says, you know, when they cross the line, it's going to say unofficial time. Even though that number, the first time that the person crosses the line, becomes attached to that player forever. It's indelible along with them. Later that, you know, afternoon or evening, there's going to come out a time, an official time. And, you know, this is sort of like, you know, people read the headline, not the retraction type of thing, because the official time is different. Sometimes it's faster than the unofficial time was. Usually it's a bit slower. And its relationship to the unofficial time, and as you look at this big spreadsheet of, you know, multiple times listed, hand times and electronic times, and then official time, is really this, to me at least, incomprehensible equation between these four different times to create the official time. And when I was at the 2020 NFL Combine, you know, we're looking at our guys' times and watching the videos and, you know, doing this frame by frame analysis on the videos where you can take the time from that frame by frame analysis and comparing it to other people, maybe more named, big name players and what their official time was, and it didn't really add up. But the thing about it is, the official time is big for the fans, but the GMs and coaching staff, they've got their own people there. They're looking at the splits, they're looking at all these different things. So the official time is really something for TV. The splits, the 10 and 20 yard splits, is as or more important in evaluating a player, because players don't very often run 40 yards in a straight line. You know, that's a little bit cliche, but true. And that 10 and 20 yard, you know, and depending on position, the 40 yard number is almost nothing. I mean, it's amazing to hear about Jordan Davis, you know, running a 4.78, but did Jordan Davis get to that 4.78 because he was great in the 10 and 20 and then a little bit, you know, flat, or for a big guy like that, potentially even slowing down beyond that? So someone that big, it could almost be speed endurance at that point, or is it more of a top end speed guy with a little bit less acceleration? The splits give you insight to those numbers. Our boy, Big Booty Brock, and I know in his press conference today, John Lynch was talking about, you know, how impressive Brock Purdy, who's not a, you know, big guy in the sense of height, you know, he's like 6'1", 215 to 220, but in the lower body, built a lot more like a running back, very thick legs, very thick butt. And, you know, also speaking of about John Lynch's press conference today at the Combine, special shout out to my boy Dustin, because his main assistant, our friend Juggernaut AI user, you should see how jacked he is, both of these guys, both Dustin and Aaron Hill, who was Dustin's assistant, who's now the head strength and conditioning coach for the Green Bay Packers. When asked about Aaron Hill, John Lynch responded, you know, said some nice things about him, and then went on to say, Dustin Perry is a big part of the foundation of who we are as a team. It's very integral in everything we do, the way I plan our practices, the way we try to organize our week so we can be most efficient and have our players ready. So Dustin Perry is our lead guy, and Aaron's been a guy working under Dustin for years. So congrats to Aaron, and always love to see my boy Dustin gets some very well-deserved praise from his general manager there, Hall of Famer, Mr. John Lynch, who met him at the Combine a couple years ago, too. Awesome guy. Didn't get to see the drunken, proud to be an American, Lee Greenwood karaoke that I've heard so much about, but maybe one day. So where was I? But yeah, looking at the 40 of the splits for a guy like Brock Purdy, you know, 4.8 something, 40 yard dash, like a high 4.8s, low 4.9s, really unimpressive. But you see the 1.55 10 yard split in there, and that's only, you know, 1/100th of a second off of Lamar Jackson's number. So, you know, you're getting elite 10 yard burst there, and that's really where, you know, Brock Purdy's moving around in the pocket and going, you know, taking off and getting a 5, 10, occasionally 20 if it's clutch moments against, you know, against the Lions, or sorry, clutch moments against the Packers, moments or movement. And so those splits are really more important. But tracking the velocity, if I was to like do away with the 40-yard dash, I'd want to be tracking the velocity, and they certainly have the technology to do this with a, you know, a catapult GPS unit, those sports bra looking things that you might see a lot of athletes wearing during the drills. When the wide receivers are running their routes, you know, what miles an hour are they hitting? You know, the miles an hour at the different points during a 40-yard dash. And then, you know, for offensive and defensive linemen, tracking the speed in the set, in a pull, you know, how well are those guys moving in space in more specific areas? And yeah, those numbers wouldn't be, you know, how the miles per hour or meters per second in a pass set isn't going to be a particularly sexy number to the fans, but would be much more informative to the teams. The combine drill that I have the biggest issue with, though, is the bench press. So the bench press, you know, you get into the questions of like functionality, how functional is this as an exercise? And that's can be a bit of a loaded question, and certainly a misunderstood question by a lot of people in the strength and conditioning world, because a football player's function is to play football. Offensive lineman's function is to block defensive players. You know, so how an exercise like the bench press relates to that is a little bit loose, a little bit dubious. But my problem with the bench press test in the context of the combine is 225 for reps is a test of strength endurance in a sport that is about power. The better strength endurance you have, probably actually the worse power you have. It's compromising your power there. It's also, you know, giving advantage to the more short-armed athlete, where otherwise the coaches are wanting the longer-armed athlete. So if I was redesigning that part of things for the NFL Combine, I would throw out the bench press 225 reps test and rather look at like a average power or peak power test with, you know, something like a tendo unit, some velocity measurement tool, which I think the NFL can afford some of those, and probably do it with different weights based on different position groups. So small skill like wide receivers and defensive backs doing a three reps as fast as they possibly can with 185 pounds. Bigger skill running backs and linebackers, maybe tight ends could fit in this as well. And running backs could be in two groups. Some of them probably better suited in small skill, but 225 pounds. Then DNs, probably DNs and tight ends with 275, and defensive tackles and offensive linemen with 315. Three reps, as explosive as possible. That's going to give you a much more complete understanding of that athlete's upper body power. How hard are they going to be able to punch, really, and, you know, create that action between them and the opponent, where, again, the strength endurance stuff isn't going to be quite the same. Plus, here the long arms aren't going to punish the athlete. They could actually, you know, be useful to them because they have a longer space to be able to accelerate the bar. So if we're measuring peak, they're going to be able to get higher numbers on that. The other option would be to do a special strength exercise. So, you know, Dustin, the head guy at the 49ers, you know, I see a lot of the training that he does with players and guys like Trent Williams, the best offensive lineman in the NFL, one of the best offensive tackles ever, you know, surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. And Trent Williams, he doesn't love to lift. You know, he's not a weight room grinder in that sense, and he's been in the NFL for, what, like 14 years now, so it's understandable that a pretty beat-up body like that isn't going to love, you know, benching and squatting the same way that a powerlifter might. And mind you, he can, when he wants to move it, he can move some pretty impressive weights, but it's more in the special strength exercises like a trap bar jump, which he's gotten, you know, gets off the ground with over 400 pounds in his hands, or some of these punching drills set up with like a jammer arm and a gym aware to measure the velocity, where he's taking three plates with one hand and a little rotation and single arm punch and putting up really, really impressive numbers. And that's going to, you know, be an even better indication of how hard is this guy going to be able to deliver a strike. Would be even a better test and measurement tool as general managers and player personnel guys look at who they want to pick. Because all of this is really about, you know, finding the highest correlation exercises, or sorry, causation exercises to what makes a good NFL player. You know, and the bench press as it stands right now, if you look at the top all-time bench press performers, very few, if any, really name great NFL careers in among that group. And the final thing is the cognitive testing. So the Wunderlic, you know, is still there, but it's kind of lost its prestige in favor of the S2 cognitive test, which what they're really trying to evaluate with that is visual processing speed. And when I was working with then Mamba Sports Academy, now just the Sports Academy, in the combine preparation world, they had a company that they worked with who did this cognitive testing too. And it's, you know, a kind of a mixture of reaction and decision making, because that's what so many of these guys are trying to, you know, that's what makes a player play fast. That's what makes it seem like a guy has great instincts, is the combination of his ability to predict what's going on because he's seen it so many times and he understands, you know, from small visual cues or, you know, alignments and formations, stuff like that, what is likely about to happen. And then as he perceives, you know, the weight shift of an offensive lineman or the first step that they take as, you know, a linebacker reads a back or an offensive lineman, he knows, because I see that happening, it's probably this that's about to happen. So I'm going to go to what I think is happening. And the guys who can do that better and better, the Ray Lewis's of the world on defense, or the Tom Brady's, to be able to see, you know, the safety's cheating this way, or I'm going to make him cheat this way with my eyes, or the wide receiver, you know, a guy like Jerry Rice or Wes Welker, who's not on paper a very fast guy, but they play super fast and super quick. It's because of this quick visual processing. So whether that's being done in a general sense with, you know, how fast can you touch these different colored lights that pop up, or in a more specific sense of like the company that Mambo is working with, they would show, you know, a 1 second clip of film and then put up a quiz, you know, what coverage was this, you know, identify where the safety was, that kind of thing. So as teams get more and more into that, they're going to get a better idea, not a, you know, foolproof idea, certainly proved by CJ Stroud, who had his score leaked last year and had this low S2 score, and then went on to have one of the best rookie seasons ever for a quarterback. But it's a piece of the puzzle. And the ability to evaluate that processing speed and processing speed potential is going to be so much more significant than certainly the Wunderlich or so many other tools that, you know, if I had to go, if a guy, you know, all things being equal and all I knew was 40-yard dash times or all I knew was cognitive testing times, well, if it's a quarterback, I'm probably going to go with just the cognitive testing. If it's a corner, I'm probably going to go with just the 40-yard dash time. But, you know, it's just another piece of data that can be valuable to them. And I'm interested to see over time how that cognitive side of things develops, because that is what separates so many of the, you know, all-time greats from good players, from guys who, you know, it doesn't work out. So that's my 10 top all-time combine performers. Some of my thoughts on how to revamp the combine for a better evaluation tool, maybe not as interesting of a television product, but make sure you check out Juggernaut AI app, use the code BEERS, and subscribe, rate, and review. Cheers.